Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
This is Tech Talk. Oh yes, and as usual, we got some good stuff here. Yeah, I, you know what? There's like cords that I was supposed to plug into things and all that to make the intro music.
Good morning,
work,
everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk. That's what this is. That's Michael Tech Talk Castlane. Dave Sparky Saganaki.
Yes, yes, he is.
And, I am.
Man, I can't. There we go. Hey, now I can hear what I'm saying too.
Congratulations.
Well, it wasn't enough that last week, you know, we had all the issues last. Well, you weren't here. You didn't get to experience last week.
I did. I showed up later. I wasn't there while you were on the air. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, you did. You did show up. Okay, yeah. So you know, by the time that the rest of the crew came on, I think things were pretty smooth. Paul Lepik took over after I did. We're talking about Round Lake Beach Fest. It was the 75th anniversary of Round Lake Beach being in existence last week.
Cool.
So that was pretty neat. Yeah. It was fun to be on. I couldn't do a regular show. We didn't have
outdoors.
Internet access.
You were outdoors in the street.
Yeah, and we missed the rain. It was perfect.
Waving at people under a pavilion. You were in a little tent-like structure.
We were looking at the intersection, which was
behind the movie theater.
Exciting and fun and frightening at times. I must have witnessed during the show, just during the hour show, I must have witnessed three or four very close calls. People just blowing through those stop signs or not, you know, listen, people, you get to a stop sign, you wait for the guy to the right of you. If you get there at the same time, that's as simple as that. And people just don't get it. It amazed me constantly sitting there watching them, and you'd see them getting angry, you know, thinking I'm not waiting anymore, and they'd just take off and almost scream people. I was worried someone was gonna flip the car right into the tent there. We were that close that close to the intersection.
Yeah, curbside radio.
Yeah,
you don't where else do you hear that but WRLR?
This is true.
98.3.
This is true. Man, fantastic. It was a fun show though. I warned people on air. In the notes for the podcast. You can listen to the podcast from last week if you would like to. It is not a bad podcast, but it is mainly music. I played a lot of music interspersed with tiny bits of little bits of tech news and stuff. Some stuff which we may even cover again this week just to catch it up in a more comfortable environment.
Hey, speaking of news, have you heard about Car Talk?
I heard they're retiring.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're gonna get a bump in our listenership. we're gonna take all the overflow from the Car Talk.
I'm gonna have to restrain myself from laughing because simply because it hurts. Anyway, this show is a little bit of a homage to Car Talk, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I've always thought of us as being a bit of the technology Car Talk, kind of the tech Car Talk.
Yeah,
the tech talk.
If only. If only. Those guys are really good.
No,
they could listen to them for hours.
Well,
and I've got satellite radio, and on Saturdays sometimes they'll have like three or four shows.
Yeah. Well, there's a secret to why they're as good as they are, though.
Why is that?
They edit. They actually go back and listen to the stuff that they recorded again.
Well, all NPR does that, I guess.
Yeah.
They edit heavily. And what's wrong with that?
No, I think that's a good thing. That's
probably really smart.
We could probably, in fact, definitely, we would benefit from a little editing.
Speaking of that, have you ever seen the Ricky Gervais show?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, with that, you know, and so for people that don't know what that is basically it's a radio show
mm-hmm.
that they animate.
Yes. Yes.
We need that.
Yes. Carl Pilkington is their kind of their whipping boy, and Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant sit around and ask Carl what's going on in his life, and then they make fun of him for it. And
right, but the guy's really creative, though. I mean, he comes up with really fantastic, silly, wonderful things, but they're really creative ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I can't quite figure out if Carl is legit. Is he really just kind of that? I think he is really that weird and that kind of strange. But he puts up with Ricky just and Steve just making fun of him for, you know, his whole life, essentially.
But yeah, but Ricky Gervais seems to be genuinely amused by the guy.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, I believe that. I believe that Ricky's very amused by him. I think Steve is as well. But yeah, it's if you haven't seen it, it's an acquired taste in some ways, I think. Now, I used to listen to the Ricky Gervais show back before it was on TV and all this. He used to put out a podcast, and that's where the genesis of this was to some degree is from this podcast that he put out for a couple of years that wasn't super regular, but it was out there. It was good stuff. It was good stuff. You can pick those old ones up probably still on iTunes or someplace, and they were free.
So what's actually happening in technology news?
Oh gosh, we got to talk about that now, man.
We don't have to.
Well, you brought up
we could talk whatever we'd like.
You brought actually. Up before we went on air here about Microsoft Surface, the new. The newest thing going on with tablets these days.
And we have very limited information about what we don't know about pricing, for instance. That was the big thing missing from the presentation.
Yeah, pricing is going to be interesting. Now, our good friend Nick Bilton, who was on the New York Times, he came on air with us at least once. Right? Yeah, I think just once, right? But he was he wrote a great breakdown of the Microsoft Surface and the reason why he feels that it's going to compete successfully potentially with the Apple iPad is, you know, we've talked many times with our good friend Jay Garman about how tablets are not creative instruments, but the Microsoft
input is what's you know, a keyboard basically,
yes,
a mouse.
Yeah, and Nick got beat up for making this comment that the Apple iPod is not a great tool for creation, and he was called out. And
no, the iPod isn't. Neither was the iPad. Yeah.
Yeah, the iPod. Yeah, yeah. The iPad. I don't know what.
Neither one of them are.
What day is it? But the neither of them are very good. And yeah, the keyboard in particular. And I've got an iPad now, and I've gotten reasonably facile with the touch screen keyboard, but it's still very difficult to type anything longer than some quick notes. I use it in meetings and things, and I'll make little like shorthand jots to myself to come back and pick up later. But Nick makes the point, as Jay has as well, that really for any sort of long form entry, it's very difficult, particularly because there's no arrows. There's no way to easily get an update among and around the text that you've input except by breaking away from the keyboard and putting your hands up onto the other areas, and it's not accurate enough for with your fingers to get to just the words that you want to and things.
Yeah, tablets have their limitations. All of them do, I think. But and when, it sounds like Windows is trying to address that. However, the extremely limited access that people had to the prototypes makes me wonder exactly how well that's going to be executed.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard good things about it because of the design, that was a focus, you know, and this is the reason why I brought up this article by Nick Bilton, which by the way you can find at bits.blogs.nytimes.com. Nick Bilton's bits is great. But if you look on there, in his comment that he makes, though, is he really feels that, or actually he's quoting Rotman Epps, who's I don't know where she's from, Forrester Research, but she says that the problem with the Surface is going to be the problem that Microsoft has got and has had with their desktop, which is that there's too much choice. You know, Apple restricts your choices to a very limited amount of things. There's going to be so many options and so many choices and softwares and different variations of the product and so on that they run the risk anyways of shooting themselves in the foot with too many consumer options, and it just tends to confuse people.
What do you mean by the RT? There's two different tablets.
Surface is the one that I'm talking.
No, right. But there's two different Surfaces. One is going to be running Windows 8 Pro.
Oh.
And the other one's going to be running a version called RT, I think.
Okay. Which, now, I've heard of the RT.
It's a difference of processors as well. I think the RT is. You know, I should have studied up on this. RT, I think, is running
on... You sound more knowledgeable than I am. So
RT is going to be running on the ARM processor, I think.
Okay.
And the Pro version is going to be... And it's a big weight difference. The Pro version is going to be running an Intel chip, I think. But and there's a big weight difference. The Pro version is going to be almost 2 pounds. The RT version is going to be closer, under 1.5, I believe.
Okay, so. Okay. I wonder if people are going to be willing to put up with the extra weight. I guess if the if there's enough advantage to it, I don't know.
Some folks have posited that the lower end version, the RT version, will compete more with the iPad, whereas the Windows Pro version will compete more directly with Ultrabooks.
Oh, okay, and like laptops and mini laptops and things like that. Yeah, because I have a tough time. I love the iPad for travel. I've been using it. In fact, I have to admit, I don't use my Kindle anymore because I do all my reading on my iPad now and all this other good stuff. But if it was much heavier, It would be tough. You know, I wouldn't be as comfortable carrying it around as I am with
it. I think it'll be a while before we figure out what the perfect weight is, and also our sensibilities about that will change over time. I mean, you know, years ago, a 4-pound laptop would have been like, oh my God, that's fantastic. Nowadays, that's at the upper scale.
Yeah.
You know, 4 pounds is like, that's pretty heavy.
That's very true. That's very true.
Relative to, the iPad's what, 1.5 pounds, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A little less.
I think that's about right. Yeah. And the same thing happened with the cell phones, of course, too. You know, for a long time there, the cell phone form factor was getting tinier and tinier.
Like microscopic.
Yeah. And now it's gone kind of the other direction because people are getting more value out of the the screens.
They're trying to stretch towards the tablet functionality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out as technology develops.
Yep.
And I can't... it'd be interesting to have this in the mix. This new competitor in the mix.
Yes. Yeah. I'm excited by that, too. It's going to be the first non-Android tablet that's really, I think, going to put at least have a chance of putting a dent in the iPad.
Yeah, we have to see. We have to see. The iPad's a juggernaut. It's a juggernaut. Man. That's unbelievable. It's a phenomenon.
Speaking of tech juggernauts, I think it's about time to bring Jay on. he may not appreciate that reference.
He is. No, he's a juggernaut.
I think so. Yeah. So I'm going to give it a shot. Now, I warn him in advance.
He's an intellectual juggernaut.
Yes.
He's an intellectual tech juggernaut.
Yes, and I warned him in advance. We may have some issues here with our...
Skype.
With our Skype.
We use Skype to communicate with Jay down in Louisville.
We do. And he's actually... Oh, man, now we can hear the...
The ring is back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was gone for a while. Now, Annette, we can't live without that suspense on the show of the ringing phone of Jay Garman.
Yeah, you know what?
Will he not answer it?
Yeah, and I can see that. I think we are actually going to have issues because the microphone preamp is not showing anything here, so we may be better off if we are not talking to Jay. I don't know.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic...
Oh, yes, it has. I know. Okay. I tell you what. You know what? I think what we'll do, though, is should we give him a shot?
That's good radio.
Should we try him with the cell phone? Or
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't see why not.
Why not? We'll see how this works. I'm going to plug him in with the...
Has that worked in the past? Can he hear you? When you do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's soft for him. I think it's quite faint, but they can hear us.
You can always point put it on speakerphone and point a mic at it.
Yes, that did work. I remember the one time.
Yeah.
Now this should work, however, with the aux. We'll give it a shot.
We're experimenting on the air.
It's always fun. It's
DIY radio.
Let's see what we got here. Okay, so I got to get Jay's phone number up here for me, and I'll try to actually type and not talk at the same time because I don't want to put his phone number out on the air. But here we go. I've got it rolling. Okay. Let's see how this works. We'll give it a shot. Hey, look at that. He can hear it on air very nicely. At least that's a good thing.
That's a good sign. But if he can't hear us...
Well, that's an issue.
Yeah. Well, hello.
Good morning, Mr. Garmin. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you wonderfully.
Not only can we hear you, the world can hear you.
I don't know if you can hear Dave. I've got you on my cell here. We did seem to be having some difficulties with Skype this morning, so I'll... good morning and happy Alan Turing's 100th birthday day. And I know you're traveling and driving around and things like that, but it's a good day for geeks.
Yes, it is. Alan Turing being one of probably the top five geeks of all time. Yes, it is a good day to be a geek.
Yep. Absolutely. And of course, you know, he's one of the more troubled stories in geekdom as well. Although there seems to be a fair number of that, but he's got more of more reason to complain than a lot of the geeks. But yeah, one of the things though that's cool, and people can find out a ton about Alan Turing, of course, on Wikipedia. We don't need to go over all of it, but it is kind of fun today. Is Google loves to, of course, do fun things with geek topics when they're appropriate for the day. And today, being Alan Turing's 100th birthday, they have dedicated the Google page to a Turing machine that you can actually play with and figure out and kind of get a sense for maybe not the mathematics, but the thinking process that goes into creating a Turing machine.
That's pretty cool, and I would also commend people into Google Lego Turing Machine. There are videos and instructions on the web for building, if you have enough of the Lego components, your own Turing Machine out of Legos.
Oh, wow.
I think is the ultimate point of human civilization, is to build a Turing Machine out of Legos.
Yes, absolutely. And some have posited that, in fact, human civilization and the cosmos in general is actually just a very, very large Turing machine. We just can't really see the output of it yet.
Yes, I believe the person who best expressed that theory was one Douglas Adams, explaining that the Earth was designed to figure out the question to the answer of life, the universe, and everything. But it was a faulty design.
Yes, exactly. But they rebooted it, and of course it's the mice that are running this experiment on us in order to find out that answer. So hopefully at some point they will get the answer. I doubt that it'll be shared with us, though, sadly. But of course you can find out a lot about Douglas Adams on Wikipedia too. The Turing machine that Google put up is pretty neat. I have not attempted or gone so far as to try to build one out of Legos myself. The point of the Google Turing machine, though, is, of course, very self-referential and is designed to actually spell Google in binary. So you can go there and expend a fun 10 minutes or so playing around with that.
Yeah. 10 minutes? Try days. Depending on how mathematically inclined you are, yes.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't take you. It shouldn't take you days. Even if you know, I only got to the second G, but even so, even trying trial and error without giving it any thought shouldn't take you too long. But it is fun. It is fun. And man, Jay, speaking of, it's been a long time since we've spoken to you. Last week we did not get a chance to talk because we had no internet. We were out at Beach Fest, and I think it was the week before then that we skipped the show or something along those lines. So it's been a while since we've had Geek Trivia. Dave's actually here with us as well, and he's waving his hands. We're not sure if you can hear him. Can you hear Dave when
he
speaks?
No, he can't hear me. He can't hear me.
No, he says no.
He can barely hear you.
I am aware that he is speaking, but the specifics of his words are occasionally wrong. It's a lot like being married to someone.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Ha! Did you hear that, Dave? Ha!
Dave says ha.
I got the laughter, yeah.
so now we know, though, the last time we did speak, and I won't keep you on for super long here because I know you are traveling, we were talking about the NASDAQ and stocks and which company has been on the index for basically forever, since the index existed.
Yeah, the question was, what original company in the Dow Jones Industrial Average is still in it? No company has been in it the whole time. No company has been uninterrupted. Hmm. But there's only one original company that's still in the index, and it's actually been there longer than anyone else, and it's General Electric. There were 12 founding companies in the Dow Index, and General Electric is actually really the only one that still exists in its original form, that's still like called General Electric, and it's still around. Two of them were trust busted. A bunch of others were bought. You know, one was American Sugar, which is now a small portion of Domino. One was American Cotton Oil, which is now a very small portion of Unilever. One was U.S. Leather, which doesn't exist. One was U.S. Rubber, which is now a tiny portion of Michelin. But GE was one of the original 12. Back when they were just 12, they're now 30. And they were bumped out briefly from 1898 to 1899, and then from 1901 to 1907. But since November 1907, GE has been in the Dow Jones Industrial Index without break. So they've been there for 105 years.
Wow.
And they're the only company to pull it off. and what's weird is it went from 12 to 20 to eventually 30. But at one point, when there were just 12 spots in the index, there were still only 10 companies, because U.S. Rubber and U.S. Steel both had two spots, one for their preferred stock and one for their general stock.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How dominant those companies were, is that they were each 1/6 of the Dow Jones Index.
Wow.
Man.
And so when you wonder why Teddy Roosevelt said, you know what, we got to go in and break up some of these companies when they're so big they take up two spots in the Dow.
Yeah.
That's how big they got.
It's like they talk about now, you know, companies too important to fail, and they certainly would have qualified back then, and our politicians would have subsidized them, I'm sure. Okay, all right.
Dave's, well, it's really funny, if you want to go way deep on the rabbit hole of the Dow Jones, is there was, before there was the Dow Jones Industrial Average, there was just the Dow Index, which was all railroads. It was nothing. It was almost entirely railroads. That's how dominant railroad it was in the United States in the late 1800s. Because the whole point of the stock market was basically to figure out how well railroads were doing.
And of course, but even with all of that power, they still lost control of distribution to the auto industry and the freeway manufacturer, you know, the highway, building of the highways and so on. So that's kind of...
And then airplanes play a part, and now we don't need to send information physically. That's what the internet is for. So, you know,
yep.
Monopolies will eventually self-defeat. It's how much damage do they do while they're in charge, is the question.
Exactly. Oh, man. And GE, too. I'm almost surprised that it still maintains in the index, in the average, just because it had such a poor... basically this last decade. It's just been absolutely terrible. And the only reason really that I know that is that my wife's father had a lot of GE, and when he passed away, we were given it and held on to it for a very long time, sentimentally, when it really should have been sold. And having that discussion, I know it took up a fair amount of our time as well. So I'm almost surprised that it's still stayed in there. And it wouldn't shock me if it drops off of the index again at some time in the next couple of years here.
Actually, I would be shocked if this dropped, just because GE, which we've talked about previously, has the most complicated tax profile of any business in the world, because GE is literally everything. It has six major divisions, and five of them do very, very well. It's the sixth, GE Capital, that has kicked the crap out of its stock because it was hyper-exposed to all of the mortgage default swap stuff. So it drubbed down the other five divisions that do things like make aircraft engines and light bulbs and own movie studios and amusement parks and all of that. Like, all of those divisions are doing really well, and they're key to our economy, and they're very, entrenched in everything that happens industrially in the United States. It's just 1/6 of the company, which has a whole bunch of the balance sheet that screws it up.
Yeah.
So it's actually a very good bellwether of our economy in microcosm.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is it sounds very much like our economy then. Well, Jay, what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, you're not going to be surprised by this question because you've seen a preview of it, but last week was the 19th anniversary of Sally Ride becoming the first American astronaut the Soviets had put to up previously. And just this week, the Chinese put up their first female astronaut. So this is a question about women in space, and the question is very straightforward. How many women, and this number will probably surprise you, how many women have flown in space, and what percentage of all space travelers do women represent?
Yeah, great question. As you said, I did see a preview of that. But yeah, no, that's a fantastic question and very very timely.
Love it.
Yeah, I was intrigued by the story of the Chinese woman who was put into space as well, and there's a lot of good background and info on that. Well, Jay, I will let you get back to your drive and all that. I hope that you have a wonderful trip and weekend. And of course, people can find a lot more Jay at jgarman.net, and hopefully next week I'll be able to corral you for a little bit longer time, and we'll actually have all of our technology and wires and everything working.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave's
like a plan, Chief. I'm looking forward to it.
Dave's not crossing his fingers, but don't wait underwater for that. I think is the ticket. Well, Jay, have a great one again. JayGarman.net. Jay, great having you on. And thanks for taking the time with us.
All right. Take care, fellas.
Yep.
Take care, Jay. Love you.
All right. Bye.
Man, he just is what an amazing guy. He just, you know, off the top of his head, you know, rattles off this fantastic, succinct summary of GE's financial condition. You know, it's just amazing.
Yes. Oh, I know.
Just like blink, and he's driving somewhere.
Yes, right? yes, he's on the road. He's taking his family's life in his hands in order to give us up-to-date geek trivia and information just off of the top of his head there.
And comes up with a fantastic question, another fantastic question for next week. Can't wait to hear the answer.
Absolutely. Great stuff. I'm going to bring us out for just a minute here. We've got some legal IDs and spots and all sorts of good stuff here. We're going to keep it short, though, and we'll be back at you in just a couple of quick minutes. So stay tuned.
See you in a minute.
WRLR.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
As you may know, WRLR is a nonprofit, all-volunteer station. All of us here give our time, resources, and energy to provide the community, and the world for that matter, with unparalleled entertainment and information. Our motto, radioactive means involvement, our involvement alone isn't enough. There are operating costs that go well beyond our immediate resources. We need you. Community involvement is everyone's involvement. Please go to our webpage, WRLR.fm, and click on Donate. The rest is easy. The amount is up to you. Our budget is like yours. Every contribution is an important part of keeping us all radioactive.
Superwash is a proud sponsor of programming on WRLR 98.3 FM. Superwash is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and provides automated and do-it-yourself car washes. Superwash services the Lake County and surrounding area, located at 1750 Orchard Lane in Round Lake Beach. For additional information, the phone number is 847-740-2613. Superwash, often imitated, never duplicated.
In the beginning, there was nothing except geek. Bleed geek, live geek, die geek, that's me. Latest news, comics, latest news, video games. You play it, you talk it, you read it, I talk it. This is Greg Sitkowski, radio host for Radio Geek.
Monday night, 5 to 6 p.m.
on WRLR 98.3 FM. Radio Geek, it's live, it's fun, it's me.
All right. Man, I like that. I like that promo. You know, radio
That's a
geek.
Great promo. We need to steal it totally.
Yeah. You know, or at least we got to make sure that he starts playing our promo on his show. You know, that. You got to have some crossover listeners there.
We need a geekier promo.
You know, you might be right. It might be time to redo that promo. We recorded that a long time ago, years ago. So we'll have to do something with that.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. You know, the funny thing was, is I actually had somebody. Not that. Somebody was very interested. It was not from the promo, but it's from the intro that we play. I had a listener request the music bed for that. He was very interested in getting that music. I was able to get it for him. I was surprised actually that I found it in my deep archived library of of junk.
God knows which hard drive it was on at what time.
Exactly, but yeah. we did get that. So that was kind of fun. It made me think about maybe it is time to start re-recording some of this stuff. So man, Jay Garman was great to listen to again. You know, jaygarman.net, you can find that. You can always find our stuff too at techtalk.wrlr.fm or at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Don't forget to like us on there too, so that I don't know why, but you should.
get our stuff before we get famous.
Yeah, exactly. Get that signed Facebook page before we make it big. I think if we were going to make it big, we probably would have already. It's
you never know.
We're past the time.
Yeah. Actually, it would probably be unreasonably disruptive if we did. I mean, who really want to make it?
Well, no. That has actually occurred. Believe it or not, that's occurred to me. I've thought about, what happened? You know, say somebody from Clear Channel called us up and said, Dave, Mike, this is it.
Well, that's not going to happen.
We're going to syndicate you. I've got a 2 million listenership audience that is dying for Tech Talk.
Yeah.
It occurs, it's like, well, gosh, you know, would I want to disrupt my life that way? I don't know. For right now, though.
Well, where would you have to go? We could do it anywhere.
Well, that's it.
We'd have to edit as well.
So
we'd have to talk like five times as long. We'd have to do like a 5-hour show.
To get the good solid hour. Yeah. They'd have to give us some interns, I think, is what it would cut. Now, I could go for some interns. Give me some interns,
man.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, somebody to organize my schedule and prep the show for me and, put music and news in front of me.
It would be interesting if we prepped.
Yeah.
It'd probably be a
much tighter show.
We should try that.
I
think it would be tighter. I don't know how much better it would be.
I do prep a little bit. Now, one thing, here's one of the news items that I had prepped up for us. Speaking of podcasts, the reason I was talking about where you can get our podcast and all that is I wanted to mention Apple, which has been one of the easier ways to get access to podcasts is through iTunes, and you can subscribe and then it shows up every week or whatever on your iPod, iPad, and all the other good places. They're pushing podcasts out of iTunes. They're not going to have podcasts in the main iTunes app anymore. It's going to be a little more difficult to run across.
I wonder
them,
why. I
You know, they've done this with a couple of different things. They moved books out of it, iBooks.
There's no money in it, right?
There's money in any of this stuff.
But in podcasts, not, no?
Probably not as
so
much.
What, do you have a theory?
No, I just think that they're just trying to keep their main app streamlined, really is what it comes down to. They moved, like I said, they moved iBooks out of there. iTunes University also has been moved out of the main Apple iTunes thing. So now as the iOS 6 software is becoming more available, it's not that they're getting rid of podcasts. Keep in mind, it's not like they're saying, hey, we're not going to help you with your podcast. They're giving podcasts their very own app. It's going to be, iCasts or something and doing it that way. So particularly if you want to use it on your mobile devices, it's theoretically going to be a lot easier. I have to confess, that is one thing that's been frustrating me a bit on the iPad is in order for me to get to the podcast, which I listen to almost no music on my iPad. I listen to almost strictly podcasts. I just don't put music on my iPad for whatever reason. For me to get to it, I have to go into the music player, and then I have to get past, and this took me a little bit to figure out, I have to get past all of the things that are asking me what genre or album and all the other junk, and go and flip over to the podcast tab, and then there I can see my podcasts like I'm used to seeing it. But it takes effort. It's not easy to just flip into podcasts, and I'm looking forward to an app that'll be just directly podcast.
Oh, that sounds very cool. And I'm guessing that's different markets. I'm guessing the people that are heavily into music on iTunes would or music player, whatever they call it on iPad, people that are into podcasts aren't necessarily that heavy into music.
You know, that's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
I would believe that. I would believe that that would be true.
And also the reason that you're not putting music on your iPad is because don't you use your phone mostly for music now?
I use my phone and streaming almost exclusively for music. Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing, in fact, that I've found recently. I had this recommended to me many times over the years. Tried it once, didn't like it, and I've come back to it now. Actually, one of the James, who was a regular listener, recommended again, is Stitcher for podcasts. And Stitcher lets you kind of create your own little mini radio stations built around the podcasts that you choose and select, and then you can just let it run and go, and it plays. And I was against it originally because I didn't feel it gave me enough control over the order and how I listen to my podcasts, but I've tried it again recently, and I've got to give it a bit of a recommendation that I do like it. Stitcher is good. Speaking of the whole streaming music, though, I'm back on the music thing. Now, I talked about this a little bit briefly last week, but there's really been kind of a hullabaloo lately.
I like hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo.
That sounds like a telescope party.
Yeah, exactly. The hullabaloo. If they do have a party, they should call it that.
Yeah.
I'm on board. But there was a little bit of a hullabaloo because, and I'm trying to find the article, and I apologize, I can't find it. It's not coming up for me here. It was on CNN.com. There was a number of discussions of it. And then there was a young lady who was in her early 20s who now is a writer for one of the major outlets, and she talked about the fact that she has some 11,000 odd tracks of music, none of which, or very little of which, she paid for. And she feels that she owns these tracks, and she understands intellectually the issue with not having paid for the music, that she got them from some file sharing, but also too from CDs that she burned when she worked as a DJ at a college station. But felt that it was somewhat justified in that people don't own music anymore, and that shouldn't be the way that artists are marketing themselves is in order to sell CDs or tracks to individuals. This, as I said, created a bit of a firestorm because there's a lot of people that were very upset with this, including good friend of the show Mike Miller, who always takes a very strong pro artist stance, as a creator himself, that makes sense, and as a musician.
And Mike Miller was an author as well.
He's an author. He's a musician. He's come on air with us many times to talk about his technical books, but he's also very created a lot of musical books as well, musical how to and. Conducting for Dummies is one of his more recent things that he's put out.
Conducting for Dummies?
Yes, yeah.
Like train conducting?
Music conducting. Yeah, you don't want to see that book on the dashboard of the L when you're downtown in Chicago. his stance was downloading, ripping, sharing, whatever you do with those tunes, if you're not getting money back to the artist, it's wrong. And not only that, but it harms everyone. It harms not only the artist, but ultimately, because the artist is harmed, it harms us. And there were some interesting statistics associated with that, in that there are something like 25% fewer artists that are able to make their living by being professional artists than there were even as recently as 10 years ago. And 10, or no, I'm sorry, it was something like 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. The feeling is this is directly due to the fact that people are not paying as much for their music. There's also a lot of controversy over streaming sources such as Spotify and Pandora. Spotify has been held up as one of the worst offenders of the "we're going to stream music but pay the artist virtually nothing" venues. So
aren't they required to license, or has the FCC resolved that issue in terms of paying licensing fees?
And there is some of that, and I guess that they've got, though, that Spotify actually has made specific deals, though, with the major music distributors, Warner Brothers and others, to pay a specific amount with them that's not going through the same licensing regulations that the FCC requires. So the money is not getting back to the artist in the same ways that it would, say, if we play music here on the radio station. You know, we pay a set amount as a radio station for
per
license,
year.
Per
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And Spotify, I guess, does things a little differently. And there's also, of course, the independent artists who don't get covered under that, and they lose out as well. They get paid a very little amount.
It would be really nice if this all got sorted out. If people got compensated, you know, somehow. We've gotten spoiled, like television and radio have spoiled us. We endure a certain amount of advertising, and mm-hmm. and then we get the content for free.
Yes.
So that's the expectation we've become accustomed to.
Yeah.
But what would you pay to not watch commercials or not listen to commercials? What would that be worth? And
yeah.
And how much do our artists what way can we compensate artists for their work? No, we want to see artists compensated, but we also don't want to get killed by record companies, you know.
Mm-hmm,
Wasn't it you that was talking about how much it would cost to redo the Beastie Boys albums because of the
yes.
high fees they would have to pay for the sampling?
Yes.
So in some ways, there's very strong compensation mechanisms in place, and in others, it seems to be falling through the cracks a bit.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I think that's exactly true. And you know, there's a kind of a double-edged sword with the prevalence or the ease of getting your creations up on the internet. On the one hand, it's wonderful because people can come from literally nowhere. Lily Allen is a good example, you know, where she had a MySpace page back in the days when that meant something, and put a bunch of songs that she had written and was playing and all this. And all of a sudden, people started listening to it and recognized it, and she became extremely popular and is one of those artists now who can be a professional artist and not have to do anything else with their life but perform. On the flip side of that, because there is this deluge of new artists coming in who aren't, you know, I use the term artist loosely, who are creating, but they're, you know, just putting stuff up. It becomes more difficult for those really good artists, I think, to compete in a sense of you should pay for the music that they're creating, because it's so easy to get free and cheap music from all of these other sources. I think music has become more commoditized at this juncture than it has ever been in its existence. You know, it's easy and cheap to get music from all eras.
Distributed.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. From all eras, from all types, and to be very selective about the music you get. You're not forced to just tune to one of 12 stations on the radio dial and take whatever is fed up to you. You can go in and use your Pandora and your Spotify and your Grooveshark and get exactly the music you want to listen to anytime you want to listen to it.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know. While you were speaking, I was thinking about Sam Phillips at Sun Records and Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1954, 55, he sold Elvis's contract for $30,000, that's always people are always shocked by that and talk about how that was a bad thing and a foolish business move. But he had no choice because of the way the structure of independent record producers at that time.
Yep.
Well, he had to pay for all the records in advance. He had a, and then he put distributed them on consignment, and the retail outlets had 90 days. They had those records for 90 days on consignment before they had to pay for them. So for in other words, he would have been bankrupted
if,
by one of he would not it would have been financial ruin for him without sufficient capital to back the production of records and having a credit line 90 days out. So that's the reason he did it. But now that would have been it would have been such a, he would have been a millionaire. He would have been a he did very well down the road. Sam Phillips wasn't a poor man, but but he would have he wouldn't have had there would have been no Colonel Tom Parker.
Yep.
You know, he would have had a direct line direct line to the listener. But as you say, it's still it's a shame. Something more hasn't happened by now. I mean, it's great that Steve Jobs with iTunes sort of you know that changed it from nothing but piracy online to at least a legitimate you know several like Amazon sells MP3s. Lots of people do now. But it's a shame there's not something more equitable and fair for everybody, not just for the artists, but for the consumers as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and one point that was made online that I was reading about was excellent, was saying, you know, one of the big arguments people use for saying, why do I pirate music is because of the inconvenience of having to deal with, you know, purchasing music online. It's not easy and it's overpriced for what it is. And I think that argument is really kind of you know it's tough to hold that argument anymore, because really to buy music online, what do you have to do? You have to, you know, log in, put in your password, and hit the buy button. I mean, they, you know, that's the iTunes model. So
Well, everybody just about. Nobody's that, you know, nobody has that arduous a sign-in.
No.
You know.
So the only really inconvenient part.
We're doing it because we want to do it. There's no intellectual argument. But that doesn't mean that you don't, you know, it's kind of tempting.
Yeah, whatever the process is, it's still more inconvenient than free. You know, that's...
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you have to go. I might be giving myself away. But way back in the day when I did it once or twice, that's not always the smoothest process to download a free track.
No, it's not at all. And you're taking your you know risking your computer days with the malware that's out there
and your identity.
Yeah,
There's some really nasty buggers out there that you can download.
Yeah, but they do have to figure something out though, because like I said, I'm certainly not one of these younger generation. I mean, I grew up in the age of LPs and mixtapes and CDs and seeing that come over and all this I'm one of those guys who it would never occur to me anymore to go out and buy a CD. I just would not do it. It would not be worth my time, my effort. I don't want to have the physical media. I want to just listen to it where I listen to it. And I'm also, I think, and maybe I'm more unique in this, in that I don't feel the need to own any of the music. I'm perfectly okay with having all of my music access in the cloud and being, you know, somewhat flexible with what it is that I listen to.
I got to have it. I have to have it.
Yeah, I think that's more traditional. That's a more traditional stance.
Yeah, I just have to have it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and when I was younger, I mean, I had such an appetite for my appetite for music was actually stronger than my appetite for food. I would spend, you know, unbelievable amounts of money on music, and say, okay, well, the food budget's going to be pretty lean this week. You know, hard boiled eggs and ramen noodles. You know,
You know what may have done it for me? What may have changed things for me? And I still remember this with pain in my heart is. Gosh, how old was I? I was probably about 20, maybe 21, right around that age. And I remember it clearly. I had left work. I had gone to a Burger King. This is up in Minnesota where I grew up. And parked the car in the lot, was not facing towards the parking lot while I was eating. Someone, apparently I forgot to lock my car, or someone jimmied it. They broke in and they stole my, it was a cassette tape and collection at that time, and it was literally, I mean, it was I don't know how much it added up to, but it was at least high hundreds of dollars, which at the time to me was a tremendous amount of money. There was no way to replace the tapes that I had, and they had been stolen from me. And so, you know, I just, even the thought of trying to recreate that collection filled me with such angst and depression that I didn't even attempt it. I just switched to listening to whatever happened to be on the radio and what my friends brought. And I guess maybe that changed things for me. I've never tried to create a music library for myself again.
Ah.
You know?
Yeah. I know the feeling. I mean, we've all had our musical collections jacked at one time or another.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, speaking of, I don't know what. I was going to try and find a good segue for this, but I don't
have one.
Speaking
of being on the air and needing to do something next.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what could that be? Oh, speaking of music, there's the music.
And actually, I do have a good music.
Cool sides of the week.
I do have a good music. Cool side of the week. 8tracks.com. 8tracks.com.
I don't even know what it is, and I love it.
A great name. It's if you go there, it's like a Pandora or a Spotify, but the focus is a lot more on kind of indie music stuff. So you can go there, 8tracks.com, check that out. Good stuff. I did mention Stitcher for podcasting and things like that, so I think that's a good site to get to as well. And let me bring up, I know I've got at least one more here. I'm going through this pretty quick, as you can hear. Because we are getting right close to the end of the time here. Oh, you know, here's a good one. Okay, so school's out, right? School's done for everybody.
That's what Alice Cooper says.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what the that old song, Vacation, V-A-C-A-T-I-O-N. Yeah. But anyways.
The Bangles or something?
No. Yeah. Before then. I'm thinking like the 40s. Or 50s maybe. But at any rate, so school's out. You're done with classes.
King Cole. You're not thinking about Nat King Cole.
This was a girl band.
You better go.
Yeah, anyways. I'm going to get lost on that topic.
We'll be here till midnight. Yeah.
So school's done. You're done with classes, and you've got these textbooks around that you spend tons of money on. What are you going to do with them? You know, maybe you don't need them or want them anymore. Hopefully you didn't mark them up too bad. There are some options. I'm taking classes for my MBA, and I've got some big, thick 3-inch books that I'm hoping never, ever to look at again for the rest of my life. And I've got an Amazon account. You can actually resell them back through Amazon, and that's not a bad way to go. They, in fact, from what I've done, and I have done some research on it, they give the best dollar back to the books that you purchase, particularly if you've purchased it through Amazon. Those books are very valuable. Now, one thing you have to be careful of is the timing of it. If you're able to sell them back rather quickly, you can make a lot more money back on them, as in like up to 50% more on the price of the book than you will if you wait till after your term is done. The price tends to drop very quickly. But they do give a good value back. And there's another site I found if you don't want to do the Amazon route, which Amazon, you're going to get an Amazon voucher basically back for your thing, which is fine if you're buying through Amazon anyways, you know, it makes sense. But if you don't like it, there's another place that gives the second best amount of money for the purchase, and they will actually send you a check, is textbooksrus.com. All you got to do for any of these sites is you go in and you type in the ISBN number on there, which is on the back of any of these books, and it's a 10 or 13 digit number, or I'm sorry, a 9 or 13 digit number. Type that in, and it'll tell you how much it's worth. And then you send it off to them. Most of them will even give you the shipping voucher for free.
Very cool.
So cool stuff.
Great resource. Yeah.
Yeah, and get some good money for that. So that's Textbooks R Us, like Toys R Us.
That's especially handy if you're going to an evening classes or whatever. The bookstores aren't open when you're at the school. If you're commuting a distance to the school, that's great.
Yeah. Well, and, at least, I don't know, my school, the bookstore that they have available, man, they just try to just take advantage of the kids. I don't know what the deal is, but the stuff is always like 20% more to buy the book through there, and they give you a quarter of what you would get reselling it back to anybody.
And also, depending on the time of day you go, it could be incredibly rushed.
Yep.
You know, you can wait in line a long time to sell your books back.
Yep. So. Yep, absolutely. Now, here's another good site as well. If you're into recycling, you can actually make some money off of recycling.
That sounds like a great idea.
It is it's wonderful. Now, it's not real money. They're not going to send you a check just because you did it. But if you go to recyclebank.com and tell them what you're recycling and vouch for the fact that you're recycling, as you recycle more things and tell them more about what you recycle, they'll give you coupons and discounts and all this. Olive Garden has got some, and there's Cashy cereal. If you recycle your Cashy cereal boxes, they'll give you coupons for purchasing more Cashy cereal and all sorts of kind of, and it's kind of fun stuff. It allows you to track it. It's less about getting the coupons, I think, and more about making the statement to say, hey, I'm committed to recycling. I'm committed to green in my community. And this is a way that I can make that happen and make that statement.
Positive reinforcement for a good cause.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they're out there fighting the good fight for that and all that. So that's kind of cool. Recyclebank.com is right. Yeah, .com. I just want to make sure it wasn't a .org, but it is a .com. Recyclebank.com. And like I mentioned, textbooksareus.com also. And man, it is right at the end of the show here. I'm going to play a song for us. It's not a podcast only song. I actually played this live when we were at
Beach Fest.
Thank you. It's by Electric.
Last week.
It's by Electric Six, and it's telling you just a great place to go anytime, anywhere, whatever city you're in. You can get down there, down at McDonald's. And I love this song. I don't know why. It just cracks me up. So I'm going to leave you with that. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. This is WRLR.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We honestly do. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no doubt. And there's lots of great stuff to listen to on RLR. So if you're listening live right now, don't turn the dial. Listen to some Electric Six and Donna McDonald's, and then just stay on tune because we got more stuff coming up right after the Tech Talk Show.
Here on WRLR, Round Lake Heights.